Hello, this is Michelle from the Lost to Light podcast. Hope everybody out in our listening world is having a great day. I'm joined here with my co-host, Angie Hansen.
Hi guys, how are you?
Doing good. And you've been busy, Angie.
Yes. I've been busy working on my pre-launch for my book that just is going to be released the end of May. So lots going on with that. And it's been exciting. I've been enjoying every moment of it.
Well, good for you. Savor the moment.
I know.
Okay. Well, I am super excited for us to have our guest from the book world with me today. Joining us is Victoria Wolf. She, if you've read my book, Better Not Bitter, Journey from Heartache to Healing, and you've seen that beautiful cover on my book, that was created by the guest we have on today, Victoria. She created the fabulous cover to my book, and she did all the layout on the inside. She did a wonderful job. I've had so many compliments. So anyway, I asked Victoria to come on as a guest today because her story is a little different. A lot of times we have people on that have lost a person, whether it be a child, a spouse, a friend, a parent. Victoria's loss is a little different. She and her significant other ran their dream business. It was a gluten-free commercial baking business. And she was telling us how she would drive weekly to Nebraska and Iowa to deliver their baked goods to the natural grocery stores. And in 2020, their business was lost. So she had to recreate her life. Part of her life creation was getting into the art of painting. And through her art of painting, she actually also wrote a memoir called Perpetual Conflict, A Journey of Art and Redemption. And I will also share that she's an award-winning graphic designer for book covers and designing books. So if any of our listeners are looking to publish a book, you can contact me and I'll set you up with Victoria. She and her significant other also have a cooking channel. And when I first met Victoria, they were living in an RV and they would drive wherever there was 70 degree weather. And I was pretty envious of them. So without further ado, let's bring Victoria on.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So Victoria, thank you for joining us. So why don't you start out and tell us a little bit about the business and how you it crashed and then that process of finding your light again after the loss of your business. I understand that, you know, through that process, you dealt with a lot of old emotional wounds.
Yeah, it was a journey I didn't expect to go on. I've had a lot of failures in my life, some business, maybe not big business failures, but just things you wanted to turn out differently. So I always embrace failure. I do understand that you have to fail to succeed, especially when you're doing something new. But the big business failure, which was a dream of my husband, Rich, and I mean, we put heart and soul. We were working 80 hours a week for 5 years. We did, in our mind, everything right. We were on our way. We were poised to meet all those goals. And then it kind of got pulled out from under us. And yeah, I was devastated, obviously. I didn't understand at the time that I would be that devastated, you know, because you say, oh, we lost a business. Oh, I'm sorry. What are you going to do next? You know, it's like you're supposed to just like roll on and go, okay, yeah, that didn't work. Let's go do this. But it was all consuming, devastating. And what's crazy is I blame myself for COVID. I really do. You don't understand when I tell you what I'm going to say right now. So this happened February 3rd, 2020, closed the door, sent out the emails, let everybody know. And I turned to Rich and I said, I just want to hide from the world for the next 3 months. And then we roll into March and woohoo, Victoria gets her way. Not in the way I wanted. So I would say, yeah, it's my fault that COVID did that. I jinxed the whole thing, but that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to hide. I didn't know what to do it myself. It was so devastating. And it's still at that point, I wasn't thinking, okay, I need time to grieve. I need time to, you know, figure this out. Because during that whole time, I still had my graphic design business for those 5 years we were building that business. So I had to rebuild that business up. And that was first and foremost on my mind. So I threw myself into that and, you know, didn't really think too much, you know, about it. I just kind of like pushed it away. And then I did have a lot more free time. So Rich and I are both like, oh, what are we going to do? We have free time. We can't go anywhere. We can't see anybody. You know, we're stuck in the house. So I had always wanted to paint. And I had some painting supplies from like 10 years prior. And then I ordered some, because that's what we did then. We ordered everything and anything from
right. You know,
Amazon. And so I got some more painting supplies. I'm like, I'm going to teach myself how to paint. And I knew that would be somewhat fraught with peril because I'm a perfectionist. I'm very hard on myself when it comes to any creative endeavors, even with my graphic design. And so as I started to paint, I started feeling all these different things because I was challenging myself, and it just kind of, every painting was a different feeling. And I was just kind of going with the punches for a while. And then I got with an editor that I work with, who is the reason I'm doing books at this point. She got me into book cover design. And I says, you know what? I need to write that book. I was always going to write. I mean, I have all this time. And so we got started on that journey. And it was her idea, as I was telling her all about my painting experiences. She's like, why don't we structure your book to every painting? You talk about the painting, what came up, and then you can pull in stories from your life for your memoir. And I'm like, oh, that's so amazing. And so I started to write, and that's when it all really hit me, everything that had happened. And this is in, when did I start writing? Like June or July of that year. So it is still very raw. And I it's like everything I've ever dealt with prior to that in my life came up either in a painting, after a painting, writing about a painting, writing about my life. And it was nasty. And I'm like, I kept saying, I went through 20 years of therapy. What the hell? Didn't I get rid of this already? But it just brought all that up. And through that process, I realized, and I think Donna, my editor, said that to me at one point. She's like, Victoria, you're grieving this big loss of a business. And I never really thought about that. But as I had that idea in my head, because she put it there, I'm like, oh, that's so true. And I never thought about grieving about anything but loss of a loved one. I mean, it's like every grieving book I've ever worked on, I've done quite a few grieving books, and it's all about people. And it's like, well, what if you lose a thing? A big thing, a thing that defined you, a thing that you wanted so bad, and then boom, it's gone. It's very similar, I will assume, to losing a person in some ways. That your identity, you're asking yourself, who am I without this business? What am I going to do moving forward? One of the things, the themes that kept popping up for me almost daily was, you know, I'm just going to wait to die because I got nothing. This was my one big dream, my one big business dream, and it's gone. I'm 50, whatever. What was I then? 52? I don't know. I can't do math right away. Right? 4 years ago, I was 54, whatever. And I'm like, okay, I'm too old for the next big dream. I don't have what it would take for the next big dream. You know, everything just got sucked out of me. And so I was just, there was a couple months where I was just going through the motions. I still was painting and everything. I'm just waiting to die.
And then I met you in, I met you in 2022, I think.
Yeah. So that was a couple. Yeah. That's when the light started, you know, getting
so
brighter.
So what point did you guys start traveling in the RV then? How did that come about?
22. We left in April of 22.
Okay. So how did that come to be then? You guys just decided, well, let's leave Denver.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because we just recently stopped RVing. And so we've had, we landed here in the Detroit area. We've had quite a few conversations, some, you know, after now that it's done, you know, why did we do this? You know, did we like it? Did we not like it? And we have a lot more clarity now than we did at the time. And I think that the reason, and I'm not saying it was a bad reason, but one of the reasons that we decided to do this is we had to get away from the grief that we were feeling, even though neither of us really you know, put that label on. I know Rich, I don't think he even thought about it in those terms. We knew we had to get out of Denver because we were, our products were in, I don't know, hundreds of restaurants in Denver. So every time when we could go out and drive that first year, you know, you see a restaurant, memories, you know, memories everywhere. And we wanted to leave and the sun and the moon aligned. And so we said, okay, we can do this in 22. So we spent 2 years planning. And I think that 2 years of planning it, you know, and also, you know, exploring the painting and writing the book, all of that is what healed us. Healed me and healed us. And so we set off in 22. And I think the business was kind of behind us. It was mostly behind Rich, but not me. Even in 22, when I would go into the first Hy-Vee I went into in Nebraska on our way out, because we were in a couple Hy-Vee stores, I just made me sad. And it took me a while, probably not until last year, where I could go into a grocery store and not even think about our products. And then I would walk into every grocery store and look at the gluten-free frozen section and go, we should have been here. Oh. I'm better now. Yeah. But I think the RV journey was necessary for us to just get away and heal.
Decompress. And
we weren't on vacation. I mean, we were running the, you know, Rich got involved in the book business in 2020. And so we were doing that wherever we went.
So
we were working probably too much.
Do you want to share with our listeners what you and Rich do as far as the book business goes? Everything that you do?
Oh, yeah. He's a publishing consultant. So he helps authors with every aspect of the process of getting on to either Amazon or Ingram Spark or publishing, self-publishing their book. And then he likes to say, I do all the pretty stuff. I do the design, the cover design, the interior design, ebooks, websites, things like that. And so we both work with authors basically as a one-stop shop to do everything needed to self-publish.
Yeah, you actually helped me with my website too. Victoria, I'd like to hear a little bit more about the past traumas that uncovered while you were painting. Would you be willing to share about some of that?
I'll share about shame, because what I learned during that whole process of painting and writing, which is still ongoing, every painting I do now, I write about it. And I share about what came up and what, you know, what I learned and about the painting itself. But in the process of doing all this, I experienced quite a few moments of just shame. Body feeling shame. There was the name of the book's called Perpetual Conflict. And that's actually a painting. It's in the book. I decided one day I was going to do a self-portrait. And I don't do realism. I do some more abstract. And so I did it. I finished it. I was actually, you know, pretty happy with it. And then, I don't know, not even an hour later, I had this huge wave of shame come over me. It was so strong. And I had to immediately go get that painting. And I had to put it, I think I put it behind a couch facing the wall. It wasn't allowed to be seen by me or anybody else. I was so ashamed of it. And that kind of got me exploring all the shame that I have in life. And so I have a whole chapter on shame, all the things in my life that I was ashamed of, that, or I was felt to be ashamed of. And then I reformatted or rephrased them all, or what's that word? Whatever word I'm looking for, I'm not finding, to show that I should have never felt shame from that. And I find that shame is huge in life, especially for women. We feel shame about a lot of things. And not even 3 months ago, I did another painting and I had a huge shame response to that too. And what I discovered for myself is when I have that response to a painting, it means I'm getting even closer to my truth and putting what I really want to put on a canvas without care, without, oh, does this fit in? Is anybody going to buy this? Am I going to be made fun of? I just put myself on the canvas. And I think the fear of being that vulnerable and open, at least, you know, visually, is what brings me shame. you know, I wrote the book. It has so much information about me and my struggles and my life. You'd think I'd never feel shame. It's very weird. But it's one thing to talk about all these things intellectually. It's another thing to actually make that connection emotionally. And I think that's where the shame comes from for me. It's something I've had since I was a kid. I was raised to be ashamed of how crazy that is. But
I think that happens when we write books. And Angie, you just went through writing your book. Do you want to share a little bit about all the feelings that brought up? Because I know it did for me when you...
Oh, yeah. It brought a lot of feelings up. You know, I had a lot of loss. And so death loss, you know, of people, like you said. And it's... it took me back to all that, you know, but it was when I finished it and I closed my laptop for the first time, I had this immense, I mean, I cried and cried and it just came out. But then I had this peace about me. So it was very therapeutic for me. And now I'm just super excited about it. So
I actually went back into therapy when I was doing my book because it brought up a lot of unfinished business. But when I published it, it's like I finally let go of so much.
You know, Victoria, I have a question for you, if you can answer this. You know, with art, they use art for therapy a lot, you know, for people that are going through trauma or loss. I've done some facilitating with grievers. Do you know, like, the whole, I mean, theory behind what art does for healing?
I don't know the scientific theory behind it. It's interesting. I find that kind of my point of view with my art is about so much more than just what I put on the canvas. It's my own personal self-discovery and search for truth and honesty and transparency and also healing. And there's something about just creating that if there was a scientist on here right now, they'd probably say it, something like it opens certain pathways that, you know, have to work or something like that.
But we don't care about the scientists.
But it does do that. It gives you this safe place to express. And sometimes emotions can't be expressed any other way. And I used to always think that, you know, to express emotions on a canvas, I need to be stabbing it or throwing something at it or screaming or something like that. But sometimes it can be just so controlled and calm and even happy. I've been happy painting and realized there was a very intense feelings that I put onto that canvas. So it's very confounding. But I do love the ability of art to be therapeutic. And I hope that when people look at my art, that they feel something that causes them to question something, because we're all on a journey and we all want to, I don't want to say get better. We all want to improve, or some of us, we do want to get better. We want to fix what we think is broken, however you want to, you know, categorize it. And it's the hardest thing about art is if you're someone like me who thinks that when you put it down on that canvas, it's got to be perfect and wonderful. And so, you know, it's not just for the fun of it. Yeah. Then it gets frustrating. Yeah. That's what happened to me because I'm a perfectionist.
Yeah. You know, so when I would facilitate, at a local, grief group here in Omaha, and, I would work with the adults, and, you know, we're sitting around and everybody is vulnerable, right? You know, and we talk about sharing our stories, or we're talking about just our people. And most of these people have had death losses. And so, you know, people just kind of shut down. They don't want to talk. But so I came up with the idea during talking, I brought adult coloring books. And so when I brought those adult coloring books, I handed everybody them out, you know, and then we'd start talking. And it was amazing, the transformation, because people would sit there and they would just doodle and color, and then they would open up and start talking about their feelings while they're doodling and talking. And I just thought that was so interesting and so amazing and it's everything that you're talking about, you know, it honestly is. And I was just amazed how many people started opening up once we brought those adult coloring books in.
That's interesting.
Victoria, I have a question. Do you think the colors make a difference with the emotion? when you're painting? Do you feel something different when you're using different?
Well, I'm curious. I use very bright colors. I don't do anything muted. I don't do anything pastel. That's just who I am. And I think that that's how I see the world. I see the world as bright and, yeah, I'm like a bull in a china shop kind of person. But another artist who might be, have a little bit more serene and calm outlook on life may use completely different colors. I do think if somebody sat me down and says, oh, Victoria, you have to use all these pastels, there'd be violence probably, because those don't work for me. So I think the colors work in a way, but I don't know if they're the colors are what, you know, brings the transformation when people are painting. I think it's something you have to use a different part of your mind to paint. And I believe it's also, for me, it's kind of a path into the subconscious, because sometimes I'll paint things I don't even know where it came from. And how I know that I'm in that zone is I'll think, oh, I like that painting. Maybe I'll do one similar. And I have no recollection of the process I took to do that painting. And so in abstracts, that can be called intuitive painting, which I guess I'm an intuitive painter. I let the painting talk to me and tell me what it needs and where I go next. And so I could see that being very healing and allowing, because when you're caught up in your own thoughts and emotions, when they're all like, you know, tangled together and you can't make them out, to me, it's just you're on a feedback loop or a hamster wheel. And I think that the creative act of painting kind of pulls you out of that and makes you a little bit more open, and things don't seem as dire. I would liken it to, like, you know, you've got these bricks coming down, pushing on you. That's life. And then as you paint, the bricks just disappear and you're not being pushed anymore.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Yes, awesome. Yes.
I want to turn the tide a little bit here. We've talked about your painting. We've talked about the book covers and your business with that. And we know that you wrote a book. Can you talk a little bit about your cooking YouTube show? I've watched a few videos.
That was probably another way to heal from the business. You know, obviously we couldn't sell our products in stores, so we decided to share all our recipes with the world, you know, all the baking recipes for the pizza and the breads and everything, and then a whole bunch of other recipes. Because Rich and I are, I guess we call ourselves home chefs. We never worked in restaurants, but we're pretty skilled when it comes to cooking. So we started the YouTube channel in 21, a year before we left to RV, because it was something I always wanted to do. And I love cooking. I love talking. I love being on video, all those things. So it's something we both do together, and we really, really enjoy. We're in the process of deciding if we're going to continue, because we left the road in November because we had to come back to Michigan for various reasons. And Michigan was our home state. We made it that last year. And then we fully intended on going back out on the road, but then we got here and really thought about it. It's like, nah, we're done. We're going to become normal people again. We're not going to be nomads. And so I'm not sure what we're doing with the cooking channel, but I think eventually we'll get back. We haven't posted anything in a few months, but I think we'll get back to it. Cause I just love sharing all those recipes, and cooking is so much fun. And especially, and gluten-free can be challenging. So I like to be able to show people that it's doable. I mean, I'm 17 years now, gluten and dairy free, and I don't miss it. Well, every once in a while I miss it, but for the most part, I don't miss it because I cook 99% of what I eat. So
that's okay. Well, I'm curious, what do you think, because you actually lost your business before COVID, what do you think was the reason for
it,
that?
It was investor.
I mean, did bigger businesses come issues. Into play?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you got to be careful who you partner up with. So partners are the reason many, many businesses fail or break apart.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, look, at the divorce rate is 50%. Why would a partnership in a business be any better, really? It's probably even worse.
Yeah,
you got to get
that's a whole
there.
Other podcast episode about partnership.
Okay, I'm going to go back to when we first met, Victoria, because I love sharing this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you probably know what I'm going to talk about. So This is how I met Victoria. So My Word Publishing, who I was working with to publish my book, introduced me to, told me, oh, you should use Victoria. She's really good. I'm like, that's okay. That's fine. So I never met her. I mailed her my manuscript. And then we met for the first time on a Zoom call. And the first thing Victoria says is, I got a weird story to tell you. You know, that's how she led into it. And I'm thinking, okay, tell me. You want to share the story?
Yeah, and I wish to this day I knew where I read what I read. In one of my many trips to Nebraska, through Nebraska and Iowa, I read this story about a woman whose husband was killed by a drunk driver, and she was crusading afterward to get the laws changed in Nebraska. And I don't know where I found it, but it was so compelling. I kept reading it. And then I think it was a link to look at this I was in the story. And then I think that was a year or 2 years later is when Michelle showed up. It was so weird. It's like
she gets my manuscript and she's reading it and realizes I read about this lady.
Yeah, I mean, and how unlikely was that? And
it was more than a coincidence.
Yeah,
I think God laid this whole path out for me. And
but yeah,
we were meant to cross paths
with another author. So, and I don't think I'll have it happen with one in the future. It's such a great experience and so cool. And maybe someday I'll remember where I read that at. I don't know.
You told me at the time that you were staying in Council Bluffs and you were doing some Googling about Council Bluffs.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. And then I went down the rabbit hole and kept going. Yeah.
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the process of like creating my book cover, because you were really instrumental in helping me find the perfect cover for my story. I envisioned like having the bridge, the pedestrian bridge across the Missouri River, mm-hmm. that connects the Council Bluffs and Omaha. That's kind of what I was envisioning. But the more you asked me questions and stuff, you help, you know, you would say, well, what colors, what are you trying to get? What's your book? What are you trying to teach with your book or give with your book? And I said, hope. And you said, well, okay, what colors are hopeful to you? So that's how we started talking about the yellows and the oranges. And then the sunflower came up because that was in my book. And I told you I wanted to picture an image of a biker on it to represent Joe. And you just took all of that and made your magic. It was so cool, the process.
Well, the sunflowers were inspiring. The sunflower is my favorite flower. So it was wonderful to work with sunflowers. I absolutely love them.
Oh, I couldn't pick. You gave me so many designs to pick from. It was hard to pick the right one.
I'm curious too. Like, so Victoria, when someone is giving you like ideas like that, how do you in your mind just start creating? I mean, I know there's artists and you're able to do that, because I would have no idea where to start. You know, is there a process that you go through at all in your mind when they start giving you colors and images and mine and you just flow with it? Or,
you know, I don't think it's a set process. I think it's just the way my mind works. But I also have considerations. I have to consider, you know, what's going to make a good cover from a sales standpoint. What, you know, the goal of a book cover is to create curiosity and interest. That's really its only goal. It's not to tell the story of the book. There's book covers out there that do that you read the book and go, okay, why is this cover what this cover is? But it did its job, is it got you interested and you bought the book. I just have ideas that pop in. Like yesterday I met with an author and she found this photo online of a woman who's on a stage looking out and all you see are the lights and she's all blacked out and everything. She really liked that woman. And then she sent me a picture of a book that's in print. And this cover is like all these vibrant colors. And she's like, do you think we could put these two pictures together? And I'm like, let me think about this. And yeah, in my brain, I saw how I might. I'd not promise anything because that's a big ask. But I think I can do that. And then I get one thought and then it just goes somewhere else and goes somewhere else. And I don't know. It just works that way.
That's great.
You are very intuitive.
Yeah.
You're very gifted that way.
Yeah.
Thank you. That I think that I do. And I think that's one of my my graphic designer superpowers that allows me to create covers for that authors absolutely love, because I do. I can hear them saying things that they're not even saying, just based on, you know, the way they say it, body language, answers to questions. I like that about the process. It's really fun, because the book cover isn't just a graphic process. It's a much bigger process for the author. It's the first time that they really start thinking about their book as something other than this thing they've been typing on a computer screen for however many months or years. They think of it as a product. They start seeing it, and it helps set the tone for their marketing. It helps them to understand how to talk about their book and what's really important in the book, because, you know, you don't put things on the cover that really are not that important in the book. So you really, really get to dive deep into that in ways that you hadn't while you were writing or in editing.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. That's cool.
Very
cool.
Yeah,
it's very cool.
So I don't know if you want to talk about this, but I'm going to bring it up. You were traveling on the road, and then your husband got sick. Can you share a little bit about how that, because I'm sure we have listeners that do some traveling, what that was like?
He didn't get sick. He had a heart attack. Let's be clear. He had a heart attack in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico. We were in, we had just got there a day before. We were in Elephant Butte, New Mexico, which is right next to Truth or Consequences. You might have heard that, which is about 2 hours south of Albuquerque and 75 miles north of Las Cruces, which is, that makes us, 100 miles almost in Mexico. But so he had this heart attack. And it's a small little town. I've never in my life called 911. So he's all clammy and he's can't breathe. And I'm like, should I call 911? He's like, no, I'm fine. And then he's going in and out of consciousness. And I'm like, I'm calling 911. And I'm like, I've never called 911 before. I'm having this moment about calling 911 while he's having a heart attack. But, you know, and so I call, and then the next thing you know, the fire chief is there. It's such a small town. The fire chief comes. He came pretty quickly, and then we're waiting for the ambulance and everything. And by the time they got him in the ambulance, I'm sitting there in the truck ready to follow them to, there's a hospital not too far away. And it took like 5, 7, almost 10 minutes for them to come out of the ambulance. And that's when they told me he was having a heart attack, because I didn't know. And so they had to take him to Las Cruces, which is 75 miles south. So I had to drive 75 miles south. The ambulance had to go too. And I think the scariest part was 75 miles is a long way when you're having a heart attack. So I wasn't even sure he was going to make it. And so I'm driving. And
were you driving the RV?
No, I was driving the truck. Okay. We had a fifth wheel, so we have a dually truck. No, I wouldn't drive. Nobody wants that. So I'm driving, and I call my mom. I'm like, I can't drive alone. So my mom, I'm like, okay, mom, I'm going to call Polly now. So I called Polly. And so I had company driving, because, you know, I didn't know. And the most terrifying thing, there's a lot of terrifying things, but I watch far too many medical dramas on TV because this is what caused this. So I get to the exit in Las Cruces, and I already was passed by he passed me. They passed me in the ambulance, and I knew that the lights were on and everything. And I get up to the light, and there's an ambulance, but no lights on. And for a split second, I knew exactly what that meant. They were not in a hurry. And if that was the ambulance he was in, then he was dead. And then I'm like, no, that's not the ambulance. It's completely different colors. It's okay. So it was an adventure. And then I get to the hospital. I'm in the emergency room. I expected, okay, he came in an ambulance. The wife's coming. Let's just get her right back. And I go to the desk. It's like, well, let me check. I'm like, what? Let me check? She sits there. She might have checked. 10 minutes go by. 15 minutes go by. And I'm like, and then I see the doors. And I'm like, I'm going through. And I'm texting my mom. It's like, I'm going through. I don't care. She goes, don't get yourself arrested. I'm like, I don't care. and then there was a security guard, and I told him my story, and he's like, here, just come on through. So Long story short, he had 4 stents put in. He survived. He did have complications because they tried to drown him while he had his stents in with too much fluids in his lungs. So that was a bigger problem than anything. He spent a week in the hospital, and then it took him almost 3 weeks to recover before he could drive the RV. So we had to change our plans. We were headed to Denver after that.
Wow.
I do not recommend having a major issue while full-time RVing.
Or at least be close to a big city, right?
Yeah, but even then, because we sold everything. We didn't have a home base to go to. And I don't drive the RV, only he does. And so during that time, I was, trying to figure out, well, if he can't drive the RV and we can't stay here forever, we can't stay at this RV park forever, or even more than a month, what are we going to do? And so I had to kind of make plans. We had to move sites in between his recovery, which was 2 sites down, which I still think is stupid. Couldn't they have told the people who are coming in? It's like, look, just let him stay here. Whatever. But that's not the way it works. But it was very scary. And I do, like I said, don't recommend it to anybody.
Well, I'm glad that everything came out okay. Jeez.
Yeah. it did. I could laugh about it now. I mean, I pretty much approach most things in life.
Yeah. Well, and isn't it? I mean, all these lessons that we learn along the way, it's just like they build, and it's probably some of your artwork came out of what you went through there.
Yeah, it's crazy what we can handle as humans.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And there's one other thing before we close. You want to share with our listeners about how your painting is now? You're going to start exhibiting it.
Yes, I
think that's pretty exciting.
It is. It's been a long journey. I finally, in the last 6 months or so, got the confidence and belief in myself and my painting, and it was a goal I had. So I've been applying to art shows here in Michigan. So far, I've been accepted into 4, and I'm waiting to hear back on more. So my goal is about 6 or 7 that I hope to be in and get my art out there and show it to people really for the first time in person. It's, and just hopefully someday become a full-time artist. I don't know if we'll see if that happens, but I really just want to share my art, and I think it'll be fun. Yeah.
Well, Victoria, I'm so excited that you agreed to join us, and also, again, thank you from the bottom of my heart for creating a beautiful book cover and interior for my book.
You're very welcome. It was so wonderful to work with you.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Well, Victoria, as we do with all our guests, we kind of ask you if you have a special quote or, a verse or a saying that you'd like to share with our listeners.
I do. And I have to preface this that I can't tell you who it was from because it has always been associated with Winston Churchill, but research has been done in this. He never said this. Okay. So somebody said this and I love it. It's like, success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts. Oh. And I have lived with that for since 2020.
Well, I can 100% tell that. So thank you so much.
Can you repeat that one more time for me?
Yeah. Success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts.
Wow. Well, thank you. It's been such a pleasure to meet you and just to get to know your story. So, and I know our listeners will take away a lot from this. You're just a light. You're a light on the screen. So I wish they could see you.
She's bright colors.
Yes. I love your glasses. So,
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I wish everybody could see the visual.
Yes. Yes.
She's got beautiful red. It looks
orange
like red.
And red glasses.
Orange and red.
Yeah.
She's colorful.
I am colorful.
I love it.
Yes,
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Victoria.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.